Please help me welcome the speaker tonight, Althena from the Underground Group in Philadelphia.
Hi, everybody. My name is Athena, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey.
I'm, like, really nervous right now because there's, like, 3,000 of you guys here. So bear with me. So, Athena, alcoholic, that's me. Hi, again. I have a sobriety date. It's April 19th of 2009, and I have a sponsor. And she's right over there. Hey, Sarah. And I have a home group, and it's the Underground in Center City, Philadelphia. We meet at 4th and Lombard, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday night at 8 o'clock. And I love my home group, which is funny because the very first night I actually went to my home group is the same night that I relapsed. So, different perspective. So I guess I'll just start from the beginning. It's like a spotlight right now. I come from two young Puerto Rican parents in the Bronx. And, you know, they fell in love in high school. And my mom was like, college is stupid. Let's get married and have babies. And so they did that. And that's why I'm here. Hello. So I was born. Then what happened? Right, so they're young, they're broke, and now they have a baby. And if you guys know anything about the Bronx, it was really bad in the 80s. A lot of drugs, violence. And my parents are the weird ones because, like, everybody else is a drug addict and alcoholic, and they're, like, the really normal ones on both sides. Like, they're just very normal. Like, my mom's like, I'm going to have a second glass of wine because I'm feeling naughty. You know? Like, that's her thing. And I'm like, okay, Mom. All right. So my dad's solution at, like, 21 years old, he's like, okay, so we have no money. We're in the Bronx. What are we going to do? And so he goes for a walk, and he comes home. He's like, honey, I solved all of our problems. I went, and I joined the military. So because in his mind, it's like, all right, if I join the military, we get this newborn baby out of the Bronx, and she's going to have a good education. She's going to get away from all these drugs, away from all the alcohol, and she's going to be fine. But obviously that's not the case because I'm standing here tonight. So so he joined the military, and we did. We moved around a lot. So I lived in, like, New York, Texas, Germany, California, Arizona, Hawaii, all these interesting places. And I remember writing on my original four-step, I resented living in Hawaii. I was like, if I'd only stayed in the Bronx, I would have been fine, right? So, you know, I don't know. So we moved around all the time, and I was always the new girl, because it was like every 2 or 3 years we moved to a different state, a different country. And I remember every time we were getting ready to move to somewhere else, I was like, all right, this time it's going to be different. This time I'm going to be, like, popular. I'm going to have so many friends. Like, I'm instantly going to be loved and adored, and it's going to be amazing. And every time we moved, that was not the case. And I got frustrated with whatever state we were living in, and I couldn't wait to leave to the next state. I had a very hard time. I didn't understand. This is from an early age and, like, exists till today. Like, I didn't understand, like, how you made friends, how friendships worked, how relationships with other people happened. Because my idea of a friend, like, as a kid, I was just talking to somebody about this. You know, I'd go up to you, hi, my name's Athena, what's your name? And they'd be like, I'm Sarah. Okay, my favorite color is purple, what's yours? And then they wouldn't say purple, and I would be upset. I'm like, but my favorite color is purple, your favorite color has to be purple. Like, there's a problem here, so you need to like what I like, you need to love what I love, you need to want to do what I want to do, otherwise we have a problem, and I'm going to lose sleep over this. So, and this is at like 6, right? So I always felt like really different, really, I was a very anxious, nervous child, and like there was always a problem, and you know, Sundays rolled around, I didn't want to go back to school because I was just so, like, there was like this innate feeling of, like, something is not right, something is wrong, and I don't know what it is, but I was terrified to face the world, you know? Like, I don't remember being, like, a young, happy. I may have had, like, some fun experiences, but, like, my general state of being, even as a kid, was, like, anxious and worried and terrified and nervous and not knowing what to do. I actually did really well in school, and I didn't do well in school because I was like, you do well in school and you succeed. It was like I was terrified of what would happen if I failed. So I got all straight A's through middle school and through high school, and I was on, like, National Honor Society, and, you know, I didn't miss school until I got introduced to drinking and other substances, but I did well, and people were like, you know, on the outside it looked really good because I was doing so well, and I didn't have trouble in classes, But again, it was because I was just actually terrified of what would happen if I failed. So I took my first drink when I was 13. And there wasn't, like I said, my parents are abnormally normal, very normal when it comes to alcohol. So there wasn't a lot of alcohol. There wasn't a lot of drinking in the home. There would be like a couple parties, like my parents' friends, like they would drink and I saw what it did for them and I liked it, because they relaxed, they chilled out, they seemed to be enjoying themselves a little bit more than before. So it's like I had this image in my head of what happened when people drank alcohol, and I liked that idea. So when my friend in, I think it was like 8th grade, Tennessee, she said, "Hey, my dad makes his own wine and we're gonna drink it tonight." And like, even before I ever took a drink, I got excited. I was like, "Really? We're gonna drink?" And, so we're at the mall, cause that's where I spent all of my time. I was a mall rat. And, I was like, let's go. I mean, it's like 12:30. We need to start this drinking game here, you know? And they're like, "Athena, it's not even dark outside. Cool, people don't start drinking till nighttime." But that's not what my head said. I just knew, I saw what alcohol did to people before I even picked up a drink. So, that night, we were at my friend's house, and we stole her dad's wine that he made, and we drank it. And I remember one of the first people that I met in AA, she told me how she drank normally for a long period of time. And that was just not my experience, because that very first night that I drank it, and, like, something happened, because my friend, hear me out, right, my friend and her sister, her older sister, and her friends, and there was this kid, Nick, and Nick was really cool, and I knew that Nick was so cool, and I just wanted him to like me so much. And I remember that night when I drank, I told a joke, and Nick laughed. Like, this is how big of a deal it was to me, because I was like, oh my God, I made this kid laugh. Like, I knew I was hilarious, I just needed to be drunk. And I was like, this is amazing. Like, I made Nick laugh, and that was like the highlight of my night. I just felt like so, like, incredible, because I just made the cool kid laugh. And so that was early on in the evening. And then, like I said, when my very first drink, I didn't stop. Like, by the end of the night, they were pulling the wine out of my hand, because I think I was like half naked with a butcher knife running across this, like, the highway. And I was like, this is amazing, guys. You know, like, I just felt so great. They're worried about me. This is my very first night drinking. And, I absolutely loved the effect. I absolutely loved it because, like, you know, for the first 13 years of my life, I was, like I said, like, so nervous, so anxious. Like, my head was nonstop, constant chatter, constant noise. And then once I put that alcohol into my system, it was like, Nick thinks I'm cool. Obviously, something awesome is happening here because Nick thinks I'm cool. So, my parents were pretty strict. My dad's a military man. My mom's, you know, a pretty fierce Puerto Rican from the Bronx. So I didn't get away with as much as other people were getting away with, but whenever I had the opportunity to drink during high school years, I did drink, and I skipped school to drink, and because I was a National Honor Society, the school didn't give me any trouble because I still managed to get, like, all straight A's. When I was a senior in high school, my dad, he pulled me aside. He's like, "Athena, yes, Dad, you need to know what you want to do for the rest of your life." All right, Dad. So I thought about it for a little bit, and I was like, all right, what do I want to do? I want to do something really cool, but I don't know what it is. So I was like, I'm going to fly planes. That's it, right? So I go to my parents, and I say, guys, I want to fly planes. And my parents, being the loving, supportive people that they are, they're like, all right, cool, what do we got to do? So I didn't think they were going to say that, but once I already said that, I'm like, I guess I got to go through with this now. So they helped me find, like, a local flight school, and I started flying planes. And my senior year of high school, I got my flight license. I became a private pilot when I was 17. And I remember actually the day that I went to go get my pilot's license, my friends were at this party and they were drinking, and I was so mad, I was so bitter that they were able to drink when I was getting my stupid pilot's license, you know? I was like, so dumb. So I was pretty pissed. So I get my pilot's license, and I was really, you know, like I said, I didn't have a lot of chances to drink the way I wanted to in high school. So when they said pick a college, I picked a college I told my parents was a really good school, but really they lived in Pennsylvania. The school was in Florida. So I was like, that's a really far distance. I can do whatever I want. And it actually turned out to be like a really good school. Like, I was flying with, like, I was getting trained by Delta and everything. So I picked this school, and I was, like, so excited. I was, like, I had this image. Because for some reason, like I said, I didn't have a lot of relationships. So I watched a lot of movies, and movies told me what things were supposed to look like. So I based off, like, experiences with everything according to what, like, TVs and movies told me. So I was like, all right, once I go to college, again, because, you know, I moved all the time growing up, and I was like, okay, college is going to be it. When I get to college, I'm going to get to have, like, that college experience. You know, I'm going to be, like, a sorority girl maybe, you know, and I'm going to be, like, popular and stuff. And I'm going to be liked, and we're going to go to the beach. It's going to be great. So I go down to Florida, and, again, the very first night, I actually almost drowned in a hot tub because I was drinking so much. And in my head, I was like, this is amazing. This is fantastic because, like, already people are getting to know, oh, Athena, she's crazy, you know. She drowns, practically. So I almost drowned in this hot tub the very first night. And I remember when I first opened up the big book, when I got to AA, the first part that I related to was when Bill talked about how he had arrived. Because when I got to college and I was flying planes 3 times a week and I was living in this apartment with pretty people and I was like, I'm pretty by association now. And I was going to the beach, and I was going to classes, and I was like, this is amazing, and I'm drinking whenever I want. Like, I really felt like this is what I've been searching for my entire life. It was like, I finally got to hang with people. I finally got to do whatever I wanted to do. I didn't have any authority, like, you know, figures over me demanding, telling me what I had to do. It's like, I could do whatever I wanted to. I was still going to school, I was still going to class every morning, I'd wake up at 8, I'd drink till like 3, wake up at 8, blah, all this stuff. And then one day I missed class, and I was like, that wasn't so bad, I'm like, what was I so afraid of? So I found people who liked to drink the way that I like to drink, and we drank, and we had an amazing time, and I had like, if alcohol sucked, I wouldn't have been drinking as much as I did, you know? It cured whatever that malady was. Like, it made everything A-okay. It made living and existing so much better, and I never thought it could be that way, you know? Unfortunately, it doesn't last forever. So, you know, when I started missing class, I was like, okay, it's not so bad missing class. And then I was like, well, class sucks sober. All right. Well, I'll go to class drunk because now I'm able to answer questions. I'm not so scared about, like, raising my hand. Like, if I have my vodka and orange juice, I can just, I know the answer, you know. So I was drinking all the time. And even the people that I started drinking with who liked to drink like I did, they were getting nervous for me. They're like, Athena, you're drinking a whole lot there, and we're kind of concerned. I was like, no, I'm still, like, you know, I'm still going to class, I'm still doing whatever. But, like, it just wasn't doing the same thing. Like, I didn't want to be around people as much as I, because I started drinking so that I could relate to others. I could be okay. I could, like, the fear was lifted. Everything was fine. And then it got to a point that I was just drinking because, like, it was the thing to do. And then I remember being at this party that I loved being at, like, a year before. It was the same kind of environment, the same kind of situation. And then it kind of hit me. It was like, I don't need to be here. I don't need to be with you guys. Like, I have what I need right here in this bottle. So what I'm going to do, since I'm not 21, is I'm going to take your booze and I'm going to go home. And that was almost kind of like another awakening for me because I was like, this was my thing here. It was like, it wasn't that I needed to be around people. It was that I just needed this alcohol. So I slowly but surely started separating myself from people, wasn't going to class. I was scaring the people who were actually still talking to me at that point. And then I remember one time I was talking to my roommate. I was like, man, I missed my flight block. You know, I missed flying. And she's like, no, you didn't. You went this morning. And I didn't remember, and I had flown drunk. So it hit me. Like, I had a realization. I was like, all right, I can't keep flying, and I can't keep drinking. Obviously, something has to go. So I was working on my commercial pilot's license, and I quit flying because the idea of quitting drinking was, it wasn't even a concept. Like, there's no way that I'm going to put down alcohol. Like, yes, I've spent, like, the last 2 years and thousands of dollars, and I absolutely love doing this, but if you're telling me that I have to give up drinking so I can continue this, then it has to go. So I gave up flying, and so they were like, well, now you have to pick up another major. And I picked sociology, and the main reason why I picked sociology is because at that point I had gotten really creepy. So I was like, if I take sociology, if I study human behavior, I will learn how to interact with human beings better. That was my main focus for picking sociology because I was so weirded out by everybody. And, you know, my descent into creepiness just got more and more and more and more. And I had gotten kicked out of the apartment for terrorizing everybody. I flooded the apartment. They kicked me out. I was in this back in the dorm room drinking, and I wasn't leaving my room because I was terrified to even be around people because I was so in my head. Like, drinking wasn't making the noises in my head shut up anymore. No matter how much alcohol I put in my system, like, they were still there, and I was terrified to be around anyone. Because I lived in the dorms, like, there was a community bathroom. I stopped showering because I was afraid what would happen if somebody came in while I was taking a shower. I was terrified at the thought of there being another human being in the room with me. So it got, like, to a point. Drinking wasn't happening. Drinking wasn't working. I was miserable. I was terrified. I was paranoid. And the best option at that point seemed for me to kill myself. So I actually overdosed on a bunch of pills, and I went to the ER, and then I went to the psych ward, and I remember thinking at the psych ward, this place is awesome. And I loved it because they told me what to do. It's like, you get up at this time, you eat this, you do this at this time, and then you go here. And I just was thinking that, like, everybody here is really crazy, so I could judge everyone, like, really, really well because I was so sane and normal. Eventually, I got kicked out of school. Actually, my friends called my parents and said, we don't know how much longer she's going to live, so can you please come pick her up? So I was exhausted at that point. You know, like, my thought was, okay, now my friends know how crazy I am. Now people, society knows how insane I am. They can adjust their behavior accordingly and treat me better. So that's what I was thinking. That didn't work. And then my friends are like, we're done. You have to take her because we are terrified and we're drained and we're exhausted and she's torturing us. So I was like, you know, I'm so sick of feeling this way. Once I get to El Paso, Texas, because my parents are living in El Paso, once I get to El Paso, everything's going to be fine. I'm not 21. I don't know anybody. I can get my act together. It's going to be fine. I get to El Paso, Texas, and then I realize Mexico is a 20-minute walk from my house. I'm like, this is amazing and fantastic. So I walked down to Mexico, and Juarez was the town in Mexico. And I don't know if you guys know about Juarez, but it's like the most dangerous town in Mexico. So many women are murdered and hurt there. And I didn't care. I was like, whatever. This is alcohol that I can get if I go to this country, not in this country. So I was making my way down to Juarez. Again, like, I was working these small jobs, and it was funny because, like, those are the only relationships that I had, and I was still, like, even in the workplace, like, people, I was terrorizing people with my behavior. Still drinking, still trying to fight to fix whatever was wrong with me, because I didn't know what it was, but I was so convinced that it had nothing to do with alcohol, because I couldn't imagine life without alcohol, so it wasn't that. At this time, I was going to see doctors, I was on medication, you know, obviously with, like, the psych ward, and I still couldn't figure it out, and my family was like, listen, we're moving to Philadelphia, we think you should come, and I was like, all right, this time I'm going to go to Philadelphia, it's going to be fine, another geographical. I get up here, I get a job as a bartender, and I was like, well, I don't have to be 21 either. So I'm, you know, I try to join the military won't take me. I'm like, let me go to school, let me get an education. Once I do that, I'm going to be fine. And these are like a million different, like, for the longest time, I thought I couldn't be an alcoholic because I was so young. But, like, from the time I was 18 till 24, like, those are 6 years that I spent, like dying, like, literally trying to fix whatever was wrong with me and, like, hurting so many people around me. It didn't matter how old I was. It was like I was suffering from alcoholism so bad, you know. So I come up here. I managed to graduate from college, mainly, I think, because my professors felt sorry for me because, I would never go to class, but I got really good at making doctor's notes. So I would actually, like, I mean, it was bad. Like, I would come in limping, and I'm like, oh, it was really bad, you know. And, like, I'd give myself fake black eyes, and, like, I had fake casts and everything. And I think they knew. They were just like, she is pathetic. She is so pathetic. So they passed me with, like, a C-, just anything to get me out of their classroom. Then I was living with my boyfriend at the time, and I managed to get a job working with kids with developmental disabilities. And I told myself I would never go to work drunk, and I did. Again, it was like I had all these things. It's like I wanted to live up to this idea of, like, okay, obviously I have to drink every day, but at least, like, try to make it to school where I'm working with kids with developmental disabilities. I'm, like, her one-on-one. at least try to make it so I can show up for her. And I just couldn't do it. You know, I absolutely could not do it. I felt so awful about myself. But, like, I knew no other way. And then my boyfriend wasn't really a boyfriend. He was my hostage, you know. We were together for, like, 4 years, and I tortured him. It was really bad. So, I don't know. It wasn't, like, one of my last drunks, it wasn't even, like, the worst night of my life. It was, I got drunk. I got mad over something I made up. I went for a walk in a town I wasn't in, right, or I didn't know it. And I tried breaking into someone's house because I thought I lived there, and the cops came, and I never got arrested, and I think because they thought I was slow, because they would be like, where do you live? And I'd be like, Pennsylvania, you know? They'd ask me for my address, and I would just scream, like, towns and cities and states. El Paso, Texas, I don't know. So, this was just, like, one of, like, the last nights drunk, and then I remember waking up the next morning and just feeling, like, just, like, so heavy, like, so completely heavy. Like, I'm like, I can't stop shaking. I don't know. Something has to give. Something has to go. And it's not like I hadn't heard of AA. Like, people had tried to, like, push AA my way a little bit, but I was like, no way, no way. Because I'm thinking about a bunch of, like, old, miserable people who are just really thinking about, oh, we want to drink so bad, but we're just not going to do it, you know? And I'm like, there's no way I'm going to do that. There's no way I'm going to join that, right? But I guess it was, like, a moment of clarity. I guess God got through to me that day because it was like, maybe, just, like, one meeting. Like, go check out one meeting. And, immediately after that, my head was like, I'm just going to quit drinking for 2 weeks. You know, it's like I was suicidal. I was depressed. I had no relationships to speak of. I wasn't talking to my parents. I couldn't hold a job except for bartending. But in my head, I was like, okay, just for 2 weeks, I'm not going to drink. So my very first AA meeting, I didn't show up to quit drinking. I showed up so I could watch you guys and I could learn from you how to not drink for 2 weeks. And I sat in the meeting and I don't remember what anybody said. I just remember crying the entire time. The only thing I do remember is we had a half hour break. At the half hour break, I was outside smoking a cigarette, crying hysterically. And this woman came up to me and her name was Diane. And she said, hi, I'm Diane. I'm an alcoholic. And for some reason, when she said that, it was like something shifted in my heart. I think it was like the language of the heart, just her saying her name and she was an alcoholic, her reaching out to me. That's why I think it's so important to reach out to newcomers because like, I will never forget Diane ever. I will never forget her. And she just talked to me. She didn't say, are you an alcoholic? She didn't, like, grill me. She didn't quiz me. She was just talking to me. And for some reason, I felt, like, totally safe with her. And I went to another meeting because she introduced herself to me. Because I don't know if I would have gone to another meeting because I felt so weird, so exposed. I was sober for, like, 3 seconds at that meeting. And it was just so weird and confusing. So I went to another meeting, and I met up with Diane, and I met another lady. And, again, I think there was obviously a meeting happening, and people were talking. And I was so shocked at being sober and just, like, around people and feeling exposed and raw. I didn't know what was going on. I didn't understand what people were saying. I just, you know, they said hi. I said, hey, you know. So I spoke to Diane a couple times, and then because of work, I couldn't go to a meeting the next day, and then I couldn't go the next day after that or the next day after that. And in my head, I was like, 3 days, no meeting, 3 days, no booze. Obviously, I'm not an alcoholic because I've made it this far. So obviously, I'm going to drink perfectly fine now. So my hostage boyfriend that I had at the time, I said, hey, hun. He said, hey, babe. I said, let's split a six-pack and have a nice steak dinner. And he's like, oh, that sounds great. So again, my intention to enjoy this steak dinner with my boyfriend, to enjoy this six-pack. We got the six-pack of Yuengling. I see it in my head. We got the six-pack of Yuengling, and so I'm done with my third. I remember getting the six-pack and being so excited about it. I'm like, oh, I'm going to drink again. You know, being so excited to drink this. We get the six-pack, and I'm done with my third. He's still sipping on his first. I'm in the kitchen pretending to cook and thinking about, okay, how do I get that other beer that's in the fridge? So I'm like, hey, babe, I'm just going to grab one of your beers. And he had never told me no before. And because I had gone to a few AA meetings, he's like, no, I don't think you should do that. I turned into Medusa. I turned into a psycho lady. I was like, wait. And you don't tell me, right? So I turned into this psychotic woman. I threw his clothes out the window. I broke one of his cell phones. I was so infuriated that he was going to tell me because it was like I had already tasted it. It was already in my system. Like, there was no stopping me. And how dare you try to tell me no? So after throwing half of his belongings out the window, I stomped downstairs to the neighborhood bar. They knew me by name. And I thought I was always being safe by going there because I didn't have to drive because it was right next door. So I went to that neighborhood bar, and I stayed there until they kicked me out and just bitching the entire time while drinking shots of Jameson about what a horrible person he is for telling me that I can't drink. And I was cut off. Well, they closed. That's why. So I go home. I've made it home. I was a blackout drinker, so I don't remember. But I remember waking up and thinking, man, that was supposed to be a nice steak dinner. You know what I mean? That was supposed to be a nice steak dinner. And, like, once I put it in my system, like, there was nothing. Like, there was no stopping me. And, again, I had to be at school the next day to work with that kid with developmental disabilities, and I never showed up. And it was kind of like, this crushing on my heart. It's like, what do I do? Like, I want so bad to be a normal drinker. I want so bad to be able to not be an ass to people, you know? And I don't know how to do that. So I went to, you know, I was like, let me just try this AA thing again. I went to this beginner's meeting. And again, Ellen, her name was Ellen. She was sitting in front of me. Her pants had paint on them. And she turned around. She said, hi, I'm Ellen. Because, again, I was crying. And I was like, And she said, come to a Big Book meeting with me tomorrow morning. And if she hadn't called me the next morning and said, I'm on my way, I don't know if I would have gone. I think I just wanted to impress her or something. So we go to this Big Book meeting, and she eventually becomes my sponsor. And I start to kind of clear up a little bit. We're reading through the book, and I feel like I'm missing something. Because I'm like, we're sitting there in the book, and she's asking me, like, you know, do you relate to this? I'm like, yeah. I feel like I'm just trying to get to, like, when we were sitting down and actually reading, I felt like I was trying to get to a destination of something. And I was really confused. I didn't understand what alcoholism was. I didn't understand what this disease was. I didn't understand that, you know, physical, mental, spiritual. I didn't get it. And I didn't understand that I wasn't going to find, like, I wasn't going to find that peace and ease from meeting. So I was practically, like, unemployed, and I was going to, like, four meetings a day. The 7 a.m., the noon, the 6, and the 8. And I spent all my time at meetings, and I was getting real itchy and real restless and real agitated. And I also wasn't sober. Hold on. Let me tell you. So the reason why I wasn't sober is because you have to make it clear to me because I'm so what the – this is Alcoholics Anonymous, not Methamphetamines Anonymous, okay? So I was still abusing other substances, but because I didn't have alcohol in my system, I thought I was fine. When I discovered at, like, 60 days sober that wasn't kosher, I was too afraid to tell anybody that I had been lying this entire time. So I had this secret thing going on. So that was at, like, 2 months sober. I eventually meet this woman who is kind of explaining to me that really what I need is, like, God and the spiritual solution. And again, it's like, this is my experience. Like, it's not like I was completely sober and then I went through the steps and everything's fine. It was like, I was still on something. I kind of went through the steps. I'll get to that in a second. But this is, like, my journey through AA, as weird and as funny as it may be, but this is, like, how I got to be here, you know? So I meet this woman, and she kind of, again, the language of the heart, because I was going to, like, 4 meetings a day, and I'm, like, miserable, and I'm not working, and I'm like, ugh. And she's explaining to me, like, this thing of, like happiness. And I'm like, what? And she's explaining, like, happiness and sobriety and, like, peace and comfort. And she just, like, carried herself. Like, she was amazing. Like, she was, like, glowing when she introduced herself to me. She was, like, floating and glowing. She's like, hi, I'm Annie. And she was, like, magical, right? So I was like, yeah, let's do this steps and God stuff. And I had also gone to a bunch of meetings where they were talking about a big, scary, super fourth step. So I, for some reason, thought I just needed to get through this fourth step and I was going to be fine. Like, I didn't know what was going on. I was so confused. But I made up a lot of, like, ideas and notions about what this stuff is. I was like, okay, go to, like, 3,000 meetings a week and do a fourth step and you're going to be fine. So I made this up in my head. And I did this big, super scary fourth step, and I wasn't honest. And immediately after this big, super scary fifth step that people were talking about, I, like, snorted these methamphetamines to really get in touch with my character defects. And this is what I thought sobriety was. You know, this is what I thought, like, really doing this stuff was. So I did this. And then she mentioned something about amends, and I was like, all right, I'm done. Like, I did this thing that I thought was really going to save me and help me. I've been open to this God idea, whatever that may mean. I still think this is really stupid. And I've been lying about really even being sober, you know? So she convinced me to come out to Philadelphia, like to Center City. I went to the city. I went to what is now my home group. I hung out with people who are now my best friends. I hated them. I was like, they're happy and smiling. And I was like, you know what, screw this. I'm going to have the best relapse ever. So I was driving home and thinking this to myself. I took this kid out with me. He was sober. He was in AA with me. And I knew his parents had grain alcohol, so I stopped by his house on my way home. And I started drinking. And I looked at him and I said, you're going to drink too. So we drank. And then the next thing I know, I'm in a lot of pain. I'm waking up and apparently I'd fallen off of a wall and I'd broken my ribs and I had bleeding in my brain. Again, every intention of just having to recapture the good old days of the college days, you know. And here I am with possible brain damage. Actually, the only reason why I went to the hospital is because I looked at a picture frame. I tried to say picture frame, and I said toothfish. And so I was like, maybe you should go get that checked out. So I went to the hospital, and my dad came to see me. And I've seen my dad cry maybe twice. And once when his grandmother died, who he was really close to. And something, I guess feelings happened, right? Because my dad came in and he was crying. And tough military man, tough dude who I was so resentful against. Here he is crying, wondering what he's done. How he's been such a horrible dad so that I'm here. And I never cry. And I just remember seeing my dad like that and the brokenness. He was so broken because what I had been putting him and the rest of my family and myself and everybody else around me through. And I was like, this isn't a joke. This isn't a joke. I am going to die. I could have died. I had 6 doctors tell me that day, Athena, you're lucky to be alive. You could have died. That jumping off point that they talk about. It's I can't imagine life drinking. I can't imagine life not drinking. And I don't know what the hell to do. I'm terrified. I have never been that scared. And I never cry. So weird. So I call a bunch of people because that's the only thing that I knew how to do. Because, you know, I had said, yeah, I believe in God. I had said, yeah, turn life over, get it. But I called a bunch of people, and finally this one woman was like, Athena, we can't tell you the magic words. Really, the only solution, the only thing that's going to save you from this is, a connection with your higher power. You have to develop a relationship with God, and it starts tonight. You have to ask God for help because you're going to die, you know? And I think that was when I really had, my third step experience, because I remember being home. I was out of the hospital. My parents had left, and I was, I was on my knees, and I was begging God. I was like, God, I don't know what to do, but I can't live like this anymore. And I knew that I needed something bigger than me. I knew that I needed something because it was my only chance of actually making it out alive. Not even happy and useful and fourth dimension. It was just to live, you know? So I got with a sponsor, a young sponsor. She was really excited about the big book and she was really excited about steps. And, she loved God and she would always go around saying, yay, God, all the time. And, I was her first sponsee, so it was actually really cool because we kind of grew up together a little bit. And we went through the steps, and I really got to feel I felt like the spirit. I had the educational variety, But once I started to actually make amends is when I had these God moments. They say the God shots. When I actually sat down with people who I had hurt so bad, and I face to face, eye to eye, made amends to these people, I started to feel lighter, I started to feel lifted, and I was like, this is amazing, and I felt that God consciousness, and I was like, oh my God, and I remember thinking to myself, I'm like, they tried to explain it to me for, a million people have tried to explain it to me, God consciousness and a relationship with God, but until you get it, you're just not going to get it, you have to experience it, and I was walking down after I made this amends, and I thought that when I was walking through Center City. And then that did not last because I slowly but surely, I didn't understand 10 and 11. So I'd read through, I was like, yeah, spiritual life is not a theory, we have to live it. And here I am just reading it, right? I don't think I understood 10 and 11, so I'm like, I'm having this experience with amends, you know, I'm seeing, like, you know, my selfishness, and, like, I'm going out and I'm trying to sponsor everybody, because I'm like, I got this God thing, you know, and I'm really excited about it, but because I didn't understand 10 and 11, because I didn't understand that I was, like, that this isn't just about drinking, like, I'm powerless over, like, everything, and that, like, without God, I'm doomed, you know, I don't think I really got that first time going around. I started praying when I wanted to. I didn't understand meditation. I wasn't about to ask anybody to explain it to me. I didn't know what a 4 and 4 was, and I was too proud to ask anybody in my home group what that meant. I didn't know how to do a 10-step. I thought I was just like, let's talk. Let's chat. Maybe we'll get some tea, you know. I didn't understand that this doesn't just go away. I didn't understand that. Like, this stuff will pop up. This stuff comes back, and it's never cured. It's just a daily reprieve. And the thing is, I read it a million times in the big book, but I didn't get it, you know. So a few months into me not really praying, not meditating, not understanding a 10-step, that fire that I had for working with sponsees, now I'm, like, avoiding phone calls. I'm like, oh, them again, you know. Like, I'm co-signing whatever they want. This one dude was practically homeless, and I was like, yeah, sure, take out money for plastic surgery. That's fine. I was just like, whatever, because I didn't understand, I didn't know, and I didn't know. I honestly had no idea what I was doing. So I started to hate being a sponsor. Of course, obviously, I hated AA. I thought that God had failed me, and I almost hated everybody in my life. And the thing is, I didn't want to drink, but I really, really, really didn't want to live anymore. So, but it's so cunning because I didn't think that I was suffering from untreated alcoholism. I thought that AA just didn't work. I was like, the problem is that AA doesn't work and that you people are full of it. So when you're talking about this fourth dimension, you're talking about this happiness and this God, right? A few months ago, I'm walking down the street and I'm like, yay, God, right? But without doing this on a daily basis, now I'm thinking that everybody's lying. And it was a really, really, really miserable spot to be in because, like, before I would even open my eyes in the morning, again, my head's going, and I'm feeling that weight on my heart, on my shoulders. Like, I'm just feeling so heavy as I'm walking through the world. And everything was a problem. Everything was a problem. My job, my family, relationships. I had no money. Like, everything was an issue. And it was just really dark. So I managed to – I got in touch – and I'm also kind of sponsor hopping at this time because I didn't really – I was working with somebody and she was far away. I was working with somebody else and I didn't like what she had to say. So I was crazy. I was really crazy. And I got in touch with the sponsor that I have now. And she spoke my language. Like, once again, like, I started to get a little hope in my heart. And because, like, I called her ranting and raving a lunatic. I was a freaking lunatic. And she wasn't scared of my lunacy. She wasn't like, I'm intimidated, you need to go see a shrink. She was like, oh, okay, bedevilments, 52, check. Untreated alcoholism, check. Are you ready to do this stuff? Check. So it was just a matter of, like, again, like, I'm like, oh, my God, like, this is so much bigger than just not drinking. This is so much bigger than that. Like, I like, daily basis. Like, they were not kidding about that. And for some reason, I don't know why I had it in my head that they were kidding, right? So I'm like, oh, we got to do this all the time. And, like, my only hope for ever getting out of, like, that dark spot, my only hope for ever, like wanting to live again, because I really didn't want to live, was, like, to actually trust the process and trust what she was telling me. Was that, like, this stuff will work for you because, honey, all you're suffering from is untreated alcoholism and you're no different than anybody else. So, you know, once again, like, I went through the steps and I started to, like, get that connection back. And it wasn't like I have to get my old experience back. It was like I need a new experience with God because, like, I'm never going to recapture that. That was awesome and, like, great, but it went away. So it's like I need a new experience and, like, again, just willingness to kind of go through this stuff and, like, to be open-minded to what people are telling me. And just trust that this is what I need to do. So I had that gift of desperation and I was like, where do I meet you? And she was like, an hour and a half at a Dunkin' Donuts. I was like, okay, I'll be there. So, you know, we met up, went through the steps, made some amends. And then I really got to see that I'm like, oh man, that's what I've been missing. But something is so simple and so tiny as, like, just like prayer, meditation, and, like, self-searching inventory. It's right there. But for some reason, because I'm an alcoholic, it's cunning, baffling, powerful, I missed that. I was like, where's the solution? It's like, here it is in this book. So I get back with them. I start doing this stuff. And, like, you know, I'm excited for God again. Like, I'm excited to be alive. I'm excited to like, the home group, I had this huge resentment against my home group that I have now. Because I was like, they're all full of it, right? And it had nothing to do with the home group. It was, like, my perception of everything. It's like, I love my home group. I go there, like, every Tuesday and Thursday, I'm always there. And I love the people there, you know? And it was just, my problem was, like, my perception and my view on the world. So simple. I don't know why I missed that whole thing. So it's really easy for me to get crazy again, like today. I actually called my sponsor and told her that I can't come tonight today. Why did I tell her that? I don't even really remember, but it was something serious. And there was, like, an injustice happening. And so I left my job, and I'm walking around the neighborhood on the phone, screaming and crying, because I was like, I can't come, and, like, blah, blah. And it's just my ego cropping up, you know? Like, it's going to crop up, and sometimes I need to be put in my place, because, like, otherwise, I'm doomed, you know? And it's like, and it still amazes me that it's like, I know this stuff is going to crop up, but when it crops up, it's like it's never happened before. It's like, what? Where? Are you kidding? So you know, this stuff crops up, and then, like, we have the same set of tools, and, like, God has really done some miraculous stuff for me, because, like, when I was suffering from untreated alcoholism before I went through the steps again, like, my life was perfectly fine on the outside. Like, I had a decent job. I didn't really have any concerns with money. Like, everything was really good. And thank God I got this relationship going again, because, like, this year was a really tough year for me. And some trouble came, and I did not necessarily cheerfully capitalize on it. But I walked through some difficulties, like, difficulties that any human being would, like, have some really hard times with. Like, I was able to do it, and I did it because, like, I was almost forced to rely on God, you know? And it's really okay, because, like, with God, you can't fail. Like, with these tools, with these principles, with this design for living, you can't fail. And even though it's going to seem really scary and really dark at times, like, just keep doing it, you know? And it's just, when I put myself in God's hands, it sounds so cliched sometimes, but it's like, really, my life is better than what I could have imagined for myself, because there's no way I would have imagined me doing what I'm doing now, you know? Like, I have a pretty decent job. Like, I am a professional, you know? And I was a bartender, and I a drunk teacher's assistant, basically. You know what I mean? Like, and now I have, like, a lot of responsibility, and people trust me with their business, and that's incredible. And I have really good relationships with my family, and I love going to see them. And I remember thinking when I was younger how I wanted to do what my mom wanted to do. Let me explain that. So she is all about the holidays, and she's all about, like, family time and, like, roasting marshmallows, even though she's from the Bronx, right? She's all about doing this stuff. And I remember her forcing me to do it, and I'm like, I want to care about this. I want to give a damn about this. I want to do this because you want me to. But I had, like, no emotion and, like, no feeling, and, like, I just felt like crap, because I'm like, I don't want to do this. Like, I don't care, you know? And, like, through the 12 steps and, like, through this relationship with God, like, I'm able to show up, and I enjoy doing stuff like that yet now, you know? Like, this past two Christmases have been, like, amazing, because, like, it's just, I get to really enjoy life and holidays and stuff. When I didn't care about that before, and I thought it was stupid, and I was cynical, and I was mean. And now I don't have to be that way, you know? So I just keep doing the same stuff, and I came here tonight, even though I said I wasn't going to. and I stopped my feet for about 20 minutes. But again, it's just, like, showing up, and I've, like, had some really good, amazing, like, experiences. Like, once I have, like, these facts about myself, and once I have the experience doing it, like, I'm so much better at, like, passing it on. Because, again, it's not about me. It's, like, I've been given, like, the message, and I've taken these steps, and, like, being able to deliver that and, like, help other people has been, it says, the bright spot of our lives. It really is, you know. So I'm just going to end there. But I just want to say thank you, guys. And all right, thanks.